Digging through the past is not that hard. Rusted cars and broken shards. Mining memories in an old wrecking yard. Echoes of laughter, whispers of pain. Time stands still, but the memories remain. In this graveyard of steel.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. All we ask is that you show up with an open heart. Before we can get into the story today, I want to go ahead and talk about my sponsors, and let's give them a big thank you for bringing the Wrecking Yard podcast to fruition. First off, we got Blair Moore and his Etsy shop, Motomancer. And he's a gearhead and an artist, and he's just creating fantastic things out of old motorcycle parts and old junk he's got laying around. And I just love the idea none of this crap's just ending up in a pile somewhere that this dude's doing something beautiful with it. If you go to his Etsy shop, and I'll put the name of it down here again, but it's Motomancers on Etsy. If you go check it out, you're going to love what he's doing there. And if you were tuned in last week, you know that he made me these beautiful pair of bookends out of a 77 Yamaha XS750. Pistons, the old Yammy, my favorite bike I ever owned. Not my actual bike. I wish I had it. I'd send it to him so he can make stuff out of it. But yeah, they're beautiful, gorgeous pair of bookends. I'm really excited about them. They're already in the office in my thinking spot. So go check him out. Motomancers, some really neat stuff, and I'm just a big fan of it. And a big heartfelt thank you, Blair, for the wonderful gift. Also, Everyone Racers. It's a podcast about amateur endurance racing from beginner to advanced. Got all the news, tips, and tricks that go along with the hobby. And four friends, often teammates, Chrissy Matura, Christopher Abbott, Tim Burr, and Christian Mental Ward discuss current racing trends and news. They do some fun. You should just go check it out, man. This doesn't begin to describe everything they do on that podcast. All the numbered podcasts have to do with specific engines, and they just talk about some real, if you're just a car nerd and you really want to talk about some weird stuff, these guys cover it, man. And, I'm a big fan. It's become one of my favorite podcasts to listen to, and you can find it everywhere. You can find fine podcasts such as this one. All right. Sponsor copy done. We can just move right along. I set my timer. Cool. I got a brisket going right now, so I might cut about halfway here. It stalled on me a little bit. It don't matter. It's going to be fine. It's really going to be fine. This is my second attempt to do this podcast. I filmed this podcast last night in completion. And, honestly, I struggled with this one a little bit, and I was still a little too raw from writing it, and I should have gave it a day. Anyway, I wasn't happy with how it came out, so I'm redoing it. Sometimes that happens, but I was still feeling a little too raw, I think, to give the old woman a fair shake, at least for this part of the story. So anyways, here we are out here again. It's actually Saturday night at my house. So, getting ready for Thanksgiving. Got the big Punchline show coming up. I'm real excited about that. I hope we're moving some tickets. I suspect we are. Hey, kitty. Mary Margaret, what you doing, baby? I ain't got no food in here for you. Hey. Yeah, I hear you. All right, sorry about that. Mary Margaret showed up beside the make an appearance. She's been very needy the last couple of days. I put this one off. Honestly, I don't have a project or anything to work on that. Everything I'm doing right now is big stuff and doing this smoker review. But I put this off. I avoided it because I knew how difficult it was going to be to write. And I had to really get into another headspace to go back to the good stuff. And luckily I had a trip to North Carolina at the beginning of the week to do a corporate event. And oftentimes when you're traveling, the solitude or the solitary nature of travel makes a pretty good place to write if you're just trying to be off in your own head doing stuff. I'm very good at being invisible on the road and shrinking away to a little quiet corner and just not causing too much commotion. So did a lot of that. I wrote most of this on the flight to and from Chicago. I haven't been shy about the way I feel these days about my mom's mother. But it wasn't always like that. You have to understand from birth to my early teenage years, Papa Clark and Granny were my world. They were the grandparents I spent the most time with. I mean, the Wrecking Yard was my home until we moved away. The Wrecking Yard was my home. And I never, at this time in my life, I never could have imagined a life that took me away from that, or even damage that took me away from them. Did you catch him? Good girl, she caught a rat. They cleared out the field behind my house. It was all grown up overbrush, and they cleared out that field. And I've literally been fighting rats with a golf club out here trying to get to the house. Well, she got her one. Good job. Good job. I'm going to cut a little piece of brisket for you later, kitty. That's work. That's what's up. All right. Sorry. Where was I? Yeah, I couldn't imagine at that time in my life feeling the way I do about certain things now with back home with that place. People are funny, man. And damaged. Whew. That's the problem, is damaged people damage other people, and all it leaves is like a wake of chaos and destruction and a wide path of it until finally one of these created damaged people become self-aware somehow and breaks the cycle. That's what I've tried to do, is break the cycle. I've tried to let as little of that damage make it through to my children as possible. I'm sure they're going to be damaged their own way because of me, but I've tried to make it a lot less than what I spent a long time carrying around, not knowing what to do with. Yeah, that's the thing. You can take damage and anger, and you can push them up in a ball, and you can stick them off in here, and you can wear it like armor. Keep anybody else from hurting you. Keep anybody else from getting to you. You can build armor out of it. But all it's really doing is weakening you. You don't realize at the time you feel strong and prideful, but it's just weakening you. It's just cutting. It's ruining your insides. I picked this car today because it's the car I most associate with my granny. I mean, she had a ton of cars. She had a ton of cars. You know, Papa owned the Wrecking Yard. There was always another car, another pickup. She had a ton of cars. She used to really love these little Subarus. Back in the 70s, they made these little Subaru cars, these little two-door Subarus. And boy, she liked the hell out of them little Subarus, you know. And Papa usually had two or three of them in the Wrecking Yard for parts. But this car is the one I most associate with. I think it was present in our family from about the time I was about seven or eight years old until, well, y'all have heard, this is the car I totaled. This is what I left on the side of 45 after I punched a rod through the block before I got my Trans Am. So that's how long that car was in my life. From the time I was about 8 till I was in my early 20s, and I ruined it. So back in the 80s, there was a big Petrowax plant right there on the side of 42. Like you're right on the edge of Kilgore. Before you get to Laird Hill, mind you. but like right on the edge of Kilgore, like right across from the Kilgore Cemetery, there's a big old Petrowax plant. Smell the high, boy, you could smell it all, you know, a block in every direction. Smell like that melted Petrowax, hot, oily smell. Like a little bit like a refinery, you know. And it got into every, like when you were, like there was a little gas station across the street from it. I could just, you know, you get out of that gas station, that smell would just hit you in the face, you know. It was right down the street from Mr. Walden's grocery store. Mr. Walden was an old family friend. He had a little old grocery store right there on the side of 42, right across from the liquor store Uncle Bobby went to. And my Uncle Stanley, my dad's oldest brother, who was, we're pretty sure he was autistic. He worked for Mr. Walden as a meat cutter for a real long time. Worked for Mr. Walden. Mr. Walden kept Stanley employed for many, many years. So Mr. Walden had to shut down, you know, when the Krogers and everybody showed up. And Petrolite, all the Petrolite fleet vehicles were the same flat red color. I don't know if they bought them in that color or they were sprayed locally. I mean, there was no indications on Granny's Malibu that it had been repainted or anything like that. But they were almost like comically bad paint jobs. There you go. I don't know if maybe being at that Petrowax plant just baked that pan on because of the heat and the chemicals in there. I couldn't tell you, man. But all their fleet and their service vehicles were that same color. You know, like most companies in the early 80s, they turned over their fleet. They bought all new fleet vehicles and all that kind of stuff. I don't remember what happened to Petrolite. I think they got bought by Baker Hughes. But when they sold them fleets, they sold off a handful of these four-door Chevrolet Malibus. And there's like a weird version of this car made that is called, a lot of people used to call it an Iraqi boo. But basically, Chevrolet made a whole bunch of these four-door Malibus for Iraq. They were going to be used as taxis. Some people call them Iraqi taxis. But those were like special. They had a three-speed manual and they had extra cooling, engine cooling, and like kind of a heavy-duty air conditioner. I don't know. Something happened with those in that Iraq couldn't finish paying for them or whatever, so a whole bunch of them ended up in Canada and got sold in Canada. So those are kind of rare if you can find one of those. This is not an Iraqi boot. This is just the plain base model, worst piece of crap you could buy for a company car. You know, it's like the precursor to the front-wheel drive A-bodies. This is the old A-body, the cheap one. And they had a couple different engines. Granny's had, I think most of these fleet cars had, it was a 3.8, but it's the 90-degree V6. And you may not remember this, but GM went through a period of time in development where they were doing these 90-degree V6 program, and it was basically they were taking a small block V8 and cutting the number 3 and the number 6 cylinder off of it for simplification of talking. And what it made were these, they finally got it right. They made one called a 4.3 later on that was, it's actually a pretty good engine. But even the early 4.3s and the 3.3s and the 3.8s were basically just rough running, choppy little engines. They were trying to get a lot of torque out of a V6. They were just rough running, choppy little engines. And most of them just vibrated themselves to death. You know, they were just rough running, out of balance boat anchors. They were not good engines. And it's not to confuse it with the Buick 3.8 V6, which is a different engine design and a fantastic little V6. It's not the same thing that what came in these Malibus. This was the GM 90-degree 3.8. I think it had all of about 94 horsepower in about a 3,300-pound car. You know, it's like if you ever been passed by a stock Super Beetle, like that's what was happening in this car. This thing barely pulled itself out of its own damn way, you know. Very reliable. I mean, she drove piss out of it for a long time, but Papa, all true to his nature, done a you know, a bunch of wheeling and dealing, and somehow got his hands on one of these cars for Granny. I guarantee he didn't pay no cash money for it. He traded something for it. Something happened. Somebody owed him something. It's just how he worked. I think it's him that gave the nickname the Cessna, but that's what I always called it my whole life, was the Cessna. Papa said it sounded like an old clattering ass airplane coming down the road. That thing rattled and clattered nonstop. When I was writing this, when I was thinking about this, I could literally close my eyes and smell that car, that Petrowax smell, because you know cars absorb everything, and it was sitting out there at that plant all day, and every time with the doors open and stuff, people getting in and out. It had another weird little fluke. The back windows didn't roll down. Back windows were in fixed position, which is kind of weird because this is back when people just smoked in their cars pretty crazy, and Uncle Bobby would just hop in the back seat and smoke a cigarette with the windows up, you know. My young ass sitting beside him, you know, while he's huffing and puffing. It was red. It was that little flat red. You could just had like a tan interior. Had a trailer hitch on it because it was the 80s in East Texas, damn it. Everything had a freaking trailer hitch on it, you know. Hell, even your three-wheeler had a trailer hitch on it. I've told you little bits and pieces about my granny, but I really kind of want to paint a picture of, like, where she come from. She's the youngest of her entire family. She's the baby. And her mama, Edis, died when, I don't know, she was like 2 or 3 years old. She's very young. And her dad was kind of no account. We'll talk about him a little bit. His name is Andrew McBride. And her siblings, basically, she had 4 siblings. They basically, she had an older brother named Lonnie and Charles and Ed and a sister named Marilee. I guess there were 6 kids because she also had an older sister named Ruth. Marilee, I think, did most for a raising. And I called Marilee Nanny. She's my cousin Ricky, my cousin Tony, my cousin Gina's grandmother. My Uncle Ronnie, my Aunt Pat's mom. Marilee did most of my granny's raising, I think. That and maybe her brother, Charles, you know, tried to step in quite a bit. Her brothers are kind of crazy, too. There's stories about Uncle Ed and Charles. Blow you. Uncle Ed was a, boy, that man was a full-blown rot. Right. Uncle Lonnie, he's kind of a hoot, too. They're all dangerous, crazy old East Texas men, you know. Uncle Lonnie's the carpet king in Longview, Texas. Granny is short, redheaded, Irish temperament. Well, she did her, you know, well, she didn't take no guff. Her daddy was a bit of a con man, a wildcatter, you know. I mean, he had a couple honest hustles, but he had a whole lot of hustles that I don't think were all that honest. There's rumors about him selling oil leases and shit that didn't belong to him, stuff like that. And kind of sounds like Uncle Bobby a little bit. Maybe a little bit like me. I maybe got a little Andrew McBride in me. He's a hustler. He wanted to be around people, money and stuff. Drug his kids out to, after his wife died, drug his kids out to Beverly Hills, California. And he drove tour buses and hustled for tips and cash. And I think maybe he sold some real estate, whether it belonged to him or not, I don't know. My granny would tell me all these stories, you know, about all the wild stuff she did with her dad when she was just a kid, you know. Now he took them out to see the Golden Gate Bridge, all 6 of them in the same car, you know. He just, after his wife passed, he just sort of drug his kids along on his adventure, you know. And she being a baby, you know, she used to tell me this all the time. She's said when she wouldn't get her way, she'd cry about her mama dying, and then her brothers and sisters would let her get her way. So probably got spoiled a little bit, you know, by them. I feel like I already tell y'all this story about nannies. Kind of, I was always really close to my nanny. My nanny used to. I spent a lot of time around her. My nanny and my mother were very close. My nanny did a lot of raising of my mom because Granny was very young. My mom was born. And, you know, we'll talk more about it later. But basically, Granny was pregnant with a married man, by a married man when with my mom. You know, I didn't know all this when I was young, but Nanny did a lot of the raising of my mom. And, you know, I was first grandchild on that whole side of the family, and Nanny, you know, Nanny doted on me quite a bit. She used to call, I had like blonde hair, it was real light when I was a kid. And she's called my chicken fluff. She'd run her fingers through it, that chicken fluff. She said, "What are you thinking about behind them blue eyes, baby?" Tell me all the time. What are you thinking about? What kind of secrets you hide behind them blue eyes, baby? Miss her a great deal. She died of breast cancer, or complications from breast cancer, when I was working offshore in Louisiana. I might have told you all that story. But when she died, I was stuck on a rig, and my job ended up getting cut short. And so I caught a hitchhiker ride with this other dude on the rig that was headed to East Texas. And he took me all the way to Liberty City, to Sabine, Texas. Yeah. Liberty City, Texas, where she lived. And he took me all the way there. He dropped me off in her driveway. Come walk down the driveway. My Aunt Janet looked at me like she'd seen a ghost. "Where'd you come from?" "Well, my job, my rig got cut short early, and I wanted to be here." It was right before Nanny died. Right before Nanny. She was on her deathbed. She was real bad sick. It was towards the end. My mom and daddy had gone up to see her. I was stuck on a rig. I couldn't go. So, well, I just wanted to come see Nanny. Mama said she's pretty bad. "Man, Janet says she's been talking about you all day. She's been telling us all day you's coming to see her. Did you call?" I said, "No, I didn't call nobody. I just found out this morning and caught a ride with my friend. Mama don't even know I'm coming." She goes, "Mama, your mama's been telling her all day you weren't coming. And she's been insisting that you were coming all day." And sure enough, I walked in that house and walked up to my nanny's. They had her in the living room on a one of them adjustable hospital beds. She was so small. And she just beamed and smiled when I walked in. Like, she just knew I was coming. And the rest of the family looked like their heads were going to fall off. "Where'd you come from?" My mom, "Well, Jerry Wayne, where'd you come from?" I was like, "Our job got cut short, and I caught a ride with one of the rig hands because I wanted to see Nanny." And Daddy just looked at my mama and said, "I told you he's coming." And I sat and talked to my nanny for a good long time, and I had a wonderful visit with her. And I think she died about a week or two later when I was out on a rig job again. I didn't get to go to the funeral. But Nanny and Granny, both of them, my granny and her older sister, I called my nanny. Their mama, her name was Edith Johns, but her maiden name, I believe, was Stone. Or maybe her mom's maiden name was Stone. And the Stones were witches. Like real old Arkansas, Tennessee country witches. Like Dark of the Moon, Appalachian type shit. My granny's grandmother, people used to come from all around, buy tinctures and have her do spells and buy cures from her. They were witchy people. Witchy people. That's a weird thing to say in 2024. But like real witches, not Not like these girls that listen to Stevie Nicks a lot and smoke a little too much weed. Not like that. Like real witches. Like witches did spells and, you know, believed in the power of whatever it was they was doing to folks. I don't know if they was doing a bunch of hoodoo and curses on people, but having met them a handful of times, I can tell you, I suspect they were quite frightening to me as a child. I tell you how witchy they were. My birthday is 7/8/77, but I was supposed to be born on 7/7/77. That's when I was predicted to be born. And that's the day, that's when mama went into labor, was 7/7/77. And my daddy said them stone people was lined up and down the hospital hallway. Like half of them come down from Arkansas and everywhere, just be there. And they was all whispering and excited because if I was going to be born on 7/7/77, that was real special. That was going to make me some kind of ninja warlock or some type of shit, you know, able to maybe explode people's heads or something. I don't know. They had high hopes for whatever the hell was going to happen if I was born on 7/7/77. They were excited. They brought food. They showed up at the hospital ready. When mama was still in labor after midnight, daddy said they all just went out to their cars disappointed and left and never come back. They were just there in case they was going to see a baby witch born or something, you know. So, I don't know, man. I wish I knew what they thought was going to happen to me had I been born on that day. And if you are born on 7/7/77, I recommend maybe avoid Arkansas. There's a mess up in there. My granny used to do some spells for some folks. My granny, she had a spell that was supposedly remove warts. And she did it to me one time as a teenager. It was when I was driving to El Camino. It was after I had the El Camino and I was in Kilgore with the El Camino. And I got this big old wart right here on the pad, like the base of my thumb. And in the past, I got a wart, you know, I would just do whatever my mom told me to get rid of it. I hadn't had a bunch of them, but this one kept coming back. Granny said, I can get rid of that wart for you. She said, I know a spell that my mama's mama taught me. Her mom taught her. But I forget the details. She made me go out and find my favorite stone. I had to go find a little stone, a pebble that I liked out in the yard. And I found one. I brought it to her. And she brought me a little matchbox, like the little matchboxes, the stick matches used to come. What the shit was that? A little bug. She brought me a little matchbox and some wrapping paper and a little bow. And she rubbed this stone around that wart like 7 times. And 7 times she said this little chant about sisters, I don't remember what all it was. And then when she was done, I had to take the stone from her and put it in this little matchbox and wrap it up in pretty paper, tie a little bow on it. And then she told me over the course of the next week, just drop that package somewhere, street, wherever. Didn't occur to me at the time, the reason you're supposed to drop that package, according to the spell, I've read a little bit about it since then, is because whoever picks up the package and open it, I guess is supposed to get the wart. Boy, I'm full of bugs tonight. Talking about that witchy shit. Anyways, I don't know if the spell got rid of the wart or maybe it just fell off, but it disappeared in about a week and the wart went away. It's one of those things I don't care to look into too much, you know. I don't know that I believe in all that sort of nonsense, but I do believe in the power of manifestation, and I do believe in the power of thought process, bringing things to fruition. So I don't know how much of it is that kind of thing and how much of it, you know. Maybe I was just washing my hands better. Who knows? I'm not one to tell you that stuff is real, but I'm telling you, she did it to me, wart went away. And I assume some poor son of a bitch somewhere in Kilgore got a wart all of a sudden when he picked up a package and opened it. According to the way it's supposed to work.
Boy, I got a pitch right here.
There we go. I spent most of my time with them. You know, I had to tell you that because, well, for one, we lived in the wrecking yard. Where their house was in the wrecking yard was at the bottom of it, and our house was kind of at the side of it facing Sexton Road. It was a piece of land my papa would give mom and daddy out of the wrecking yard. The shop in the wrecking yard right by our house. It was just a short trail from our backyard through the wrecking yard to Granny's house. You have to understand that the wrecking yard, while it's full of cars, is also full of giant pine trees. You know, this is the East Texas pine curtain. And there's 60, 70 foot pine trees everywhere. So the wrecking yard at night is very dark, very scary place. There's even really, honestly, I've told y'all this before, but there's a lot of places in the wrecking yard, like even during the daytime when the sun was just sweltering, that you were just walking on pine needles amongst old cars and completely, completely darked in by a canopy of pine. And on that side of the family, on my mom's side of the family, I'm the oldest grandchild. I'm the firstborn over there. And I was Granny and Papa's boy, you know. My dad used to tell you, Papa wasn't excited about becoming a grandfather. He felt like he was too young, and he probably was. And my mom was very young when she had me, and they were very young when they had their kids. As a result, when I was a kid, my grandmother was in her late 40s, you know, or something. You know, they were not old people. Not like my meemaw and my papa Longmire, who were already old people when I was a kid, you know. My dad's the baby on that side of the family. And, you know, he had brothers that served in Vietnam and were quite a bit older than him, you know. I spent the most time with them growing up. My dad and his dad had a very quarrelsome relationship back in. That sounds familiar, don't it? They didn't, you know, we went to church with them and we did family stuff with the Longmires, but we didn't spend a lot of our free time with Meemaw and Papa, you know. And Granny and Papa Clark were right there. Granny doted on. I was her little, everybody called me Little Jerry. I was her Little Jerry. I was her first grandbaby. She had an affectation towards boys. She liked boys better than girls, I can tell you that. And anytime my mom had to work or my mom and dad just need some alone time or whatever, they need to go run errands or mama need to run errands. Dad worked all the time. I was with Granny. And then after we moved to Houston, I would spend all my summers with Granny, at least until I was about 14, 15 years old. 15 years old. I told y'all, it was my first summer away from her was the summer I spent with Longmire. But she was the built-in babysitter. And I want to paint a picture of her house for you so you can understand this crazy old museum. You know, you have to understand, they didn't have a lot of money, but also in a rural area like Lever's Chapel, like out in the sticks in the 80s, before the internet and everything, we were about a decade behind everybody else. Our appliances were about two decades. Our cars were at least a decade behind everybody else. So I grew up in an older way than the people I grew up with. But her house was... I mean, it wasn't much. I bet that house wasn't 1,000 square feet. got to be somewhere around that size. They had a primary bedroom and two extra bedrooms. And they raised, you know, five kids in the house. And in fact, when I was young, my Aunt Lori, my mom's youngest sister, still, she was more like my big sister. She was a teenager when I was a kid. And she married very young and moved away, but she was like my big sister when I was a kid. My mom and her were super close. My mom doted on her. She was my mom's baby. My mom had done a lot of her raising. The house, maybe 1,000 square foot. In the hallway, there's a big old gray heater. Gas heater. Had the little white ceramic like mesh looking stuff in it, and then the wire guard, and had real flame behind that. It was natural gas. She had a big old, I think it was propane shit. They had a big old tank out in the driveway, big old tank, you know, huge pressure vessel that they'd get filled up by the gas man. So one end of the house is bedrooms, the other end of the house, one bathroom, the other end of the house is living room and the kitchen. And the two best places to play in that house when I was a kid, especially when it was a little cold outside, was right around that gray heater or in the living room in between their two chairs. Papa always had him a recliner. And Granny usually had her some old used recliner. And in between those two chairs, there's a big old potbelly wood stove back then. Granny make coffee on the stove and stuff in the morning. But those are two main sources of heat for the house. You know, and they didn't like, sometimes they won't waste gas. They just run that wood burning stove all night. Those are two best places to play. You just warm, fuzzy. And I don't know how many times my G.I. Joes choke slammed each other off the top of that heater. I know Sergeant Slaughter put a lot of people down off the top of that little gray heater in that hallway. Also, you want to play in the living room in the summertime because that's where the window unit was. And they had window units in the bedrooms, window units, you know, them old AC units hang out the window. In the living room, when I was a kid, they had big old cabinet TVs. You know, as things modernized and other people modernized, they got the used stuff other people had. And I told you Granny had a bunch of DVDs. VCRs. She would buy them from garage sales and fix them up. And then she'd go down to the rental place and she'd rent all the movies she wanted to. She'd bring them back. She'd pirate them. That's back before we called her pirating. She'd record these movies. And one wall in the living room, the wall between the kitchen and the living room, Papa had cut off into the drywall and made little wood shelves in there about the size of a VHS tape. And that whole wall was full of VHS tapes she had recorded. She put about three movies on every tape. You know, that's what you could do back then. All my favorites, you know. Freaking Over the Top, all the Sylvester Stallone movies. You know, I liked him. Tango and Cash. You know, as it went on, she would record them for me. All the Rocky movies. I've watched the Rocky movies over and over and over again. I watched Over the Top all the time. That was one of my favorites when I was a kid. I can remember just sort of hoping in the back of my head my real dad was going to show up one day and take me arm wrestling and teach me how to arm wrestle. We was going to go win a truck in Vegas or something, you know. All the Smokey and the Bandit, all the Cannonball Run movies, Sonny, Hooper, all the good Burt Reynolds stuff. Except Deliverance, strangely enough. I didn't see Deliverance till I was an adult. And whoo boy, not a fan of that flick. Does not work out well for the chubby guy in that movie. Don't recommend. Especially if you got a trip to Alabama in the works. But all the movies, and it you know, the kids' movies too. We were Pentecostal when I was growing up. My mom and dad was Pentecostal. Pentecostals didn't do TVs in the house back then. That wasn't a, you know, now they got the interwebs and everything and all that's okay. But back then, boy, Pentecostals didn't watch a bunch, you know, a bunch of TV was a secular sin. It was not something you were to be exposing your children to. And we had a couple TVs a couple times, but they were always little black and white models. And then, you know, some traveling preacher would come visit the church, do a big speech about television program and a big sermon about television program. And dad would get rid of the TV. Granny always made sure I had that kind of stuff. Granny had me a little black and white TV with an Atari 2600 set up she got from a garage sale. I had Pong. She had me a Pong set up at one time. And she got me Atari 2600 from a garage sale and a whole bunch of games. And I played just about every game on Atari 2600. I played on that little, like a 13-inch black and white TV back there in one of them spare bedrooms. Played them games. Probably where my love of gaming began, you know, I'm sure. And then back there in them spare bedrooms, she had shelves, and she was a little bit of a hoarder, you know. And she would go to these garage, she was a garage sale queen. She'd go to these garage sales all the time. And so these shelves were full of books, sometimes just old textbooks, you know, old school textbooks. And a lot of it just science fiction and Greek mythology and books about the Bible. Probably pretty heady reading for a child, but I was an avid reader and voracious. You know what I mean? Like, I read everything. And she gave me my funny books, my Archie, and my Jughead. She'd buy them from garage sales for me, too. Big stacks of funny books for a dollar, you know? She knew I liked them cartoons. I liked drawing them. But I would read all them other books, too, all Greek mythology. I remember I was very young when I read a collection of Ray Bradbury stories the first time. And whoo, that's heady reading for a kid, man. I've read it back as an adult, like, holy shit, no wonder I'm screwed up. You know, Isaac Asimov, man. I think that's where I learned existential fear. It was at like 10 years old reading Isaac Asimov. It never occurred to me I was going to die, that everybody was going to die. So I read no Isaac Asimov. That her home was my paradise. It was my place. I come from there. It's a part of who I am. That education I got in that home, good or bad, made me who I am. I thought the sun rose and set on her. Mama, I cried every time I had to go home, even though it was just a short walk through the wrecking yard. I didn't want to not be at Granny's house. I loved the way that house smelled in the morning with her coffee going, her folders going, coffee for Papa before he went to work. And then before Papa got home from work, the kitchen was always alive with energy and smells and heat from cooking. And when we had family things together, everybody kind of congregated in that kitchen. The women would hang out in the kitchen and smoke cigarettes and sneak drinks here and there. You know, this is the drinking side of my, this is not the Pentecostal side of my family. And, you know, get into Papa's hooch a little bit here and there. And the men would hang out in the living room and listen to what Papa had to say most of the time. Argue amongst themselves about cars and cubic displacement and transmission types. We weren't a big sports family. There wasn't a lot of sports going on. But boy, they'd sit there and watch a car race and argue about it the whole time. Sit there and argue about who had the best winch. Sit there and argue about who made the best winch that none of them could afford to begin with. My younger sister was the other baby she doted on. My younger sister, Kimberly, is 5 years younger than me. And we weren't, it's not that we weren't close growing up. I know I don't talk about her a lot, but a lot of that's because I kind of won't give her her autonomy and stuff. She hasn't had the best go of things in life. She has a lot of physical ailments and stuff like that. And much like me, she suffered a great deal after my mother passed. We're way, I think we're way closer now as adults. In fact, she's coming this week. I'm really excited. She's coming Monday. And because she's coming, she's going to be here with the kids. Rachel gets to go to my punchline show with me. We don't get out much. We're homebodies with our kids. Rachel rarely ever gets to come to shows. You know, she has to hear about it secondhand or see video. So it's a treat when she gets to come to a live show. And I love when my sister comes to visit me now, but I think we're far closer. I feel like I'm far closer to her now than we were as kids, because we were at 5 years apart. We were raised in very different environments. And one of the reasons my mama and granny were super tight back then, but granny and Kimberly had bonded because my mother had that car wreck when Kimberly was an infant, and infant Kimberly had pretty much been brought up by granny while my mom was recovering from that car wreck, and it took a long time. And those are, if you've had kids, then you know a lot happens in those years. That's a lot of their personality, a lot of everything happens in those years. But I can tell you, you didn't get bored at granny's house, right? There was just always something to do. I had my Atari. I could watch movies. I could read books for hours. I could go out and explore the wrecking yard. I had a couple forts. You know, I've told y'all about my Volkswagen bus fort with my funny books and my Shasta Cola. Sometimes granny just give you an old Folgers can full of nails and a board and a hammer. You hammered nails in a board and you felt like a big man, like you was doing work like big men do. You know, you felt like you was doing something important. She used to tell this story about me is when I was about 6 or 7 years old. And, you know, my family's Pentecostal. They didn't do a lot of cursing and whatnot back in. And she used to tell this story about me that, did you eat that rat already? Where did it go? That is wild, man. Cats are wild. And she used to tell a story about me. I was about 6 or 7 years old. We always had stray dogs around the wrecking yard. Papa didn't like snakes, so he kept cats and dogs around the wrecking yard, run everything off. She said, I was over there. I was just a hammer. I remember the day I was little. I had a jacket on. It was cold. I was just a hammering board, a hammering nails in this old board on the back porch. And this old black dog they had kept coming up and licking me in the face. And they always had some kind of camper trailer. They liked camping. And they always had from the teardrops on. They always had some. My family didn't have money. They didn't, but they always had stuff. It was 10, 15, 20 years older than everybody else's stuff. But Papa was always wheeling and dealing, working little side deals. You know, he's just one of them old resourceful men. They always had stuff. They did all the stuff we, you know. Yeah, you know, I had little dirt bikes and stuff, but they were old, you know. But she was in the camp. She said she was in the camper. She was working in the camper, cleaning up the camper. And she heard me holler, "You damn dog. If you lick me again, you damn dog, I'm going to kick the shit out of you." She said she come running out that camper. She said, "Jerry Wayne, little Jerry, what did you just say?" And she said, I jumped right up at her with that hammer in my hand and looked right at her and said, "Well, the damn dog kept licking me." The thing we probably did the most, and granny, was just sit on the floor with her record player and listen to music. She loved music. She loved music. She had a huge, she had records. You know, she was a garage sale queen. She had all the records. And probably a great deal of the music that I still love now is because of that time. I can name you six of them right off the top of my head. That she was fascinated with Elvis, obsessed with Elvis. And there's rumors that when she was younger, she had a picture. And there's rumors that her and Elvis had a little hookup back when he was on his hayride tour. And I'm going to tell you, she's kind of a looker. And what I know about Elvis wasn't super picky. So it doesn't sound that crazy. She's a bit of a runaround, you know. But she certainly passed that obsession with Elvis Presley on to me. I'm a huge fan of Elvis. Yeah, I know it's 100% because that time spent at her house. I was singing songs. She had a little microphone. And I was singing songs and I would do his dances for her. I seen every Elvis movie. I've heard every Elvis song that you can get. My wife says about once a year I hit about a month where all I do is listen to Elvis music. I get into that mode. Back to it don't matter. I'm sure I get that from her, but John Denver, Neil Diamond, Janet Dean, Elton John, the Beach Boys, we listen to it all, man. Listen to it all, man. I still love John Denver. Neil Diamond, I can remember Brother Love's Traveling Salvation show would come on. Boy, I would put on a whole show for her. She'd laugh and giggle the whole time and sing right along with me. She just thought it was fantastic. The night I recorded my comedy, Brother Love's Traveling Salvation show has a lot of meaning to me because it's that old time preaching I grew up with and those master showmen. And if you listen to Brother Love's Traveling Salvation show, he's telling you about one of the best, you know. One of the best to ever do it. The night before I recorded my comedy special, The Wrecking Yard, I was in the green room, and Slade Ham can tell you, I was in there listening to Brother Love's Traveling Salvation show on repeat. Just getting in that mode. Back to the land is a friend. Everyone knows. My Brother Love's show. I always wanted to build a Vegas show based on the song Brother Love's Traveling Salvation Show. A little past my prime now for that, but boy, it could be cool if you did it right. Jan and Dean. I was introduced to Jan and Dean before I was introduced to the Beach Boys. I love the Beach Boys. The Beach Boys is Good Vibrations is my go-to song. When life's thrown me too many curveballs and I can't get right and I feel like I'm spinning out, I can put on Good Vibrations. I can hear the first couple beats of that and then I love the colorful clothes she wears. And I'm in sync with it. And that's my go-to bad day fix song. Good Vibrations. Jan and Dean, Dead Man's Curve. We would sing Dead Man's Curve and I would do the voice and boy, we'd laugh and cut up. I didn't even know what an XJ was by that age, but I just thought it was some super fast car. I was real disappointed the first time I seen an XJ. I was even more disappointed the first time I drove an XJ. The 409 didn't disappoint. I did drive a 409 one time and I was real happy about that. Elton John is the soundtrack of my life. There's no Elton John. Elton John I grew up with, though, is, you know, old Elton, badass Elton. She got me this from a garage sale. It's this little, some of y'all might be old enough to remember these. But it was like a little plastic box. It was a speaker. There's a place over here to stick your 8-track in. It's a little portable 8-track player. Big speaker, had a volume button, had a big old like a dynamite handle on top that you pop down to change the track on the song. And I don't remember what all songs were on it, but I had one of my favorite ones to carry around in the wrecking yard. I used to tape it in my bicycle. Ride around on my bicycle with it. It had Benny and the Jets, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, still one of my favorite Elton John songs. I can't hear it without thinking about the wrecking yard, without thinking about that time in my life. She loved the lyrics, man. She would get off on the lyrics. She would tell me, when Benny and the Jets come on, man, she would sing every, she's got electric boots, a mohair suit. You know, I read it in a magazine. She'd cackle. She just loved that line. She would tell me that Benny's were a truck driving drug, and that's what the, you know, all the little conspiracy theories about music back then. She knew them all, man. Everything about Elvis, everything about Janet Dean, what happened with Brian Wilson, why he went crazy, you know. It was the lore. It was the lore back then that drugged me into the music was great, but the lore behind the music. There's no lore behind music anymore. It's all carbon copy, overproduced crap. Me and my wife were just talking about this. We grew up with the first pop music Christmases, you know, the pop music from the 50s and the 60s and 70s, and they just keep trying to make it, but it's this watered, washed down, overproduced crap these days. The music was raw back then. Buddy Holly and the Crickets was raw, and the lore behind the stories and behind Waylon Jennings and Buddy Holly. Me and Granny must watch that Buddy Holly movie with Gary Busey about 15, 20 times. I've seen the Neil Diamond movie about 10, 15 times. You know, when he's playing in the black folks' joint, he raises his hand. He's got grease paint all over him, and they find out he's white because he raises his hands to do a little testimony while he's singing. She loved, boy, the Benny and the Jets lyrics. She liked that. And Rocket Man, too. Mars ain't the kind of place to raise a kid. In fact, it's cold as hell. She had laughed so hard at that lyric. She just thought that was the best thing anybody had ever wrote. There's a lot of places my comedy comes from, but a lot of it comes from her house. I can tell you that. She had albums of Bill Cosby. She had albums of Jonathan Winters. I listened to Ma Fricassee, Jonathan Winters all the time, over and over again. And the lore about how he was crazy and they kept locking him up and he kept escaping. And it was the lore. She knew all the stories, you know, whether they were right or wrong, who knows, but it was the stories, you know. I know we're not supposed to, you know, Bill Cosby done a lot of bad things, but back then he was the funniest thing I ever heard in my life. I listened to stories about Mushmouth and Fat Albert and Bill and his brother and cackle with Granny. That was my first introduction that somebody just take a microphone and make people laugh. Of course, Uncle Bobby turned me on to Red Fox and Richard Pryor. Stuff's a little rougher. Eddie Murphy. There's one guy in particular, man, back then. He had his one big hit. He was like, this is like in the late 60s, early 70s. His one big hit was a song called The One-Eyed, One-Horned, Flying Purple People. We had that movie too on VHS. My sister about wore that little movie out. It was terrible. Worst effects you ever seen in your life. But he wrote that under the name Sheb Woolley. It was like a pen name. And I don't even know what the dude's real name is, but he also did a whole bunch of albums under the name Ben Colder. And he had this funny guy. Ben Coulter always sounded like he was drunk a little bit. And he'd do parodies of popular country songs from his era. And he, Ben Coulter was real good friends with Johnny Cash, and he did a bunch of Johnny Cash songs. I love Ben Coulter. I think a lot, when I watch tapes of myself from back when I started, I think a lot of my original stage persona was definitely borrowed from Ben Coulter. You say, Ben Coulter here. Another boy, well, hell, I ain't been no colder here than anywhere else. I had a lot of favorites here. Ben Coulter had all of it. He had he did a Harper Valley PTA parody. It was hilarious. He did one of my favorites. Oh, his Sunday Morning Coming Down is one of the funniest things you ever hear in your life. I had a beer for breakfast, and then another, and then another one to top it off. Probably problematic for a kid to be listening to, but damn it, he was funny, man. One of my favorites was he did it for the Kenny Rogers song, Ruby, Don't Bring Your, Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town. He would do it as, Ruby, please bring your love to town. He was a dude, called her on the telephone. Tell your old man you're going to see that old sick widow Brown. And Ruby, please bring your love, Sam. He'll out of there where he's asking. He said, I'll be glad to buy the drinks if you just bring your purse. You know, it hurts me to ask, Ruby, but it hurts not to drink worse. That's the best redneck drunk gaslighting you ever heard in your life. Oh, shit. Look, go on a rabbit hole, man. If you don't know who Ben Coulter is, I found some of his stuff on iTunes last night and had a ball listen to it. But just go wherever you find it, YouTube, whatever, go look up Ben Coulter. And if you like old classic country music, boy, you're about to have a time. You thank me later. You're about to have a time and a half. Get you a little whiskey. No, Ruby. Please bring your love to town. Weekend full of rain. She used to record cassettes on tape cassettes because we had a tape player in the Malibu. She'd record cassettes for our car trips. And I'll tell you, that Malibu clattering or not, she took that some 50 along to Houston, hell, and every place in between. If the pedal pushed, she went, you know. She always had a couple extra antifreeze bottles full of water in the trunk just in case it overheated. Extra bottle of oil when the engine run low on oil. Them old 3.8s, they wasn't leaking oil or coolant. They wasn't running, baby. We hit every blasted garage and junk sale and junk barn from Tyler to Overton and stop off at the Family Dollar or the Dollar General on the way home and get some of them cheap Hydrox cookies and some Shasta Cola for me. Dollar General was different. It's not like a Dollar General you got now that pop up everywhere, these little weird convenience store things in the sticks. Dollar General back then was like a big store. It was like a big, I got my butt whooped in the Dollar General more times than I care to admit. I got my butt whooped with clothes hanger in the Dollar General one time for acting up. We went everywhere, man. She didn't let nothing slow her down. We just went, you know. Every day was an adventure with her. We just got in the car, went. We listened to that. We singing Forever in Blue Jeans at the top of our lungs while she bobbed that little redhead up and down, driving down. I think she might have still smoked cigarettes back then. I remember her smoking cigarettes in the Piggly Wiggly. They had an ashtray in the car. Forever in Blue Jeans, babe. Well, a little old lady from Pasadena come on, and there was this hill. When you come out of Overton, got on the main road, you went up this hill, and then you come down this big hill right before you got to Highway 42. And well, it just seemed like it's always we was coming down that hill when little old lady from Pasadena would come on. Boy, she'd floor the old Cessna, boy. That's some 50. It rattled it like it was going to come apart, and go, granny, go, granny, go, granny, go. Well, she's going to get a ticket now sooner or later because she can't keep her foot off the accelerator. Go, Granny, go, Granny, go, Granny, go. She didn't wait on no man for nothing, man. I know now she didn't have good relationships with men. I don't think her and my papa had a great relationship. I damn sure think he was probably a fan of the love tap, you know. I think he'd probably put a hand on her a couple times, too. He was a rough old dude, man. Not the kind of shit I'm into, but I just know things are different back then. But I know she gave as good as she got, too. I seen her go out to grown men, fist up, ready to fight. She's like 900 years old now. I'm still terrified of her. She gave me hints all along, though. She used to tell me this thing all the time as a kid, and I think about it now when I think about the other stuff that happened to me. And she used to tell me her job was to keep the evil out of me. Men like my daddy, my papa, Uncle Bobby, they all had evil in them. She was going to keep me from getting that evil in me. I mean, she just did whatever, man. She just did whatever the hell. Her and my papa fuss fight all the time. He'd tell her not to do something, and that, boy, that just seemed like it spurred her to go ahead and go do it, you know. It was after he died. She blew up a car battery in her face one time. She wasn't a great mechanic, but she just decided she was going to do something. She'd go out there and do it, and the car battery she'd got for a car was the cheap one, and the battery post didn't fit on it, and this is when she had my mom's Taurus. And she decided she'd just take a hammer and beat them battery posts on there, you know. Battery exploded in her face. She had to have all kind of surgery and stuff. She had a big old scar, look like Frankenstein. And truthfully told, she probably asked Uncle Bobby to come do it for her. And he pulled one of his disappearing acts. He wasn't reliable. And he was the only man she had around back in. But she'd do whatever, man. She'd go to, like I told you, she always had him campers. And well, she'd get out there, heat up a bucket of tar with a torch and crawl up on top of that daggum camper with a little wooden ladder and a, you know, and cover the top of that camper in tar to keep it from leaking water, you know. Tar that roof all down, that hot tar, shorts and boat shoes. She'd go out there with gasoline, pour gasoline on the fire ants in the yard, you know. She had it in a little milk jug. In fact, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, she got a phone call or something. She had run off in the house, and me being a stupid kid, because this is what this kind of stuff stupid kids do when you're a little kid, you got to watch little kids. I picked the gasoline jug up, poured gasoline in my right ear, ruptured my eardrum, and ended up having to go to the doctor and have medicine in my ear for a long time and stuff. She was unstoppable, though. Go out in the wrecking yard, drag crap back to the house and clean it up. I feel like we was always spray painting something. She had a collection of spray paint she'd bought from garage sales, some new, some old. And half of them, you didn't even know what color it was till you sprayed it. We'd spray lawn, furniture, cars, whatever the hell she drug up out of the wrecking yard. She decided she needed to get painted. I didn't know about the Dexatrim and the fact she was on them diet pills and she was speeding out of her mind. That's why she always had to be doing something. She's some type of boy. She'd make one of my favorite things she made in the morning was skillet toast. She'd take bread and she'd butter it and she'd throw it down her electric skillet and toast it up. And she'd get up there and get her pill in her in the morning. The time I woke up, she done made a whole loaf of skillet toast for just me and her to eat, you know. That's probably where I started gaining weight as a kid, eating all that bread. And when I was young, you know, every once in a while, boy, we'd get a call in the middle of the night, phone ringing. Papa's truck wouldn't be in the driveway. You'd hear Granny on the phone, pissed off, boy. All right, we'll be up there in a minute. That's some bar somewhere, somebody done took Papa's keys. He's too drunk. We had to go get Papa from the bar and bring him home. Boy, they'd fuss and fight all the way home. He loved picking at her. He'd just pick at Reba June. He called Reba June. Reba June? he'd just pick at her the whole way home while she's just mad as an old wet hen. They fussed a lot, man. He fell off a ladder one time out in the reggae yard doing something. Fell off a ladder. I think he broke his ribs. But no, maybe he fell down out at the lake. They had a little lake lot out at Lake Tyler. He'd wheeled and deal himself in this little lake lot, and they'd go set the camper up out there and hang out at the lake. And my nanny, at some point, she bought the lake lot next to him, and her and her family, my cousin Ricky and Tony, they'd come hang out at the lake with us kids. We'd spend all summer at Lake Tyler. Something happened. Papa fell down. I don't remember if it happened at the lake or not, but we was back at the house that night, and we didn't know he'd broke some ribs, but he was in a lot of pain. He didn't know he was in a lot of pain. He's worried he's bleeding inside. And Granny got him in that Malibu, and we started driving down the road, and that old dirt road in front of their house was just washed out road, you know, big old rut and, you know, everything in it. And every time she hit one of them, damn, Reba June, can you try to miss some of the bumps? Damn, Reba June. My God, I feel like you're looking for them on purpose. He had, I told y'all about his little ski boat. He had that little ski boat he got back from the shop. And Granny knew I wanted to drive that boat. Granny said, boy, we're going to take that boat out the lake. I was about 12, 13, something at that time. And she called Papa, asking what she needed to do to hook the boat up to the Malibu at work. And Papa said, don't mess that boat. I'll bring it when I come down this weekend. She said, no, I want to take it down there. He said, I done told you, Reba June, leave that boat alone. I'll bring it this weekend. She got off the phone with him, decided to hell with him, and me and her went out there and hooked the boat up to the trailer hitch on the Malibu. Now, I was just a kid. I didn't know the difference in hitch sizes, but the ball was too small on the Malibu. It was like a little 1/1/8 ball. That truck had a full, probably a 2 1/4, was it 2 3/8, 2 5/16, something, you know. Bigger, it's probably a 2-inch ball. It was as small as like a 14-foot boat, probably a 2-inch ball. We hooked it up to Malibu. We take off down that dirt road. About the third bump we hit, the boat passed us and went off in the ditch. And then she got worried about Papa. So we went out there and we went back to the regular yard. We got a jack and we jacked the boat up. We hooked it back up to Malibu and pulled it out of the ditch. But then she noticed that the hitch was loose. So she took bungee cords and electric tape and duct tape and just the biggest rig up you ever seen to hold that thing on there. And we towed that boat to Lake Tyler all the way from over to Texas. Boy, Papa got out of the lake that night and saw that boat behind that Malibu. He flipped his shit. Damn it, woman, I ain't got the right ball. She's probably what gave him a heart attack. Right after he died, my little cousin Brandon, that's my Aunt Lori's boy, he was about 8 years old, and he had become the new, he was the little one. He was the new favorite at that time. He spent a lot of time with him when he was a baby. He's probably the only one who knows him about as well as I do, him and my sister. And Brandon was living with his family in Jacksonville, Texas, and we went to visit him after Papa died, and he was Papa's boy too. And he said, all dead? And I said, yeah, he's a little bit old thing. He says, is it because Granny bugged him to death? And boy, I remember my dad almost hollered when he heard that. He thought that was the funniest thing in the world. It's because Granny bugged him to death. You know, somebody said that around that baby. Just send money to Jimmy Swaggart every payday. She watched Jimmy Swaggart every Sunday. Send money to Jimmy Swaggart every payday. I guess she's trying to buy her way out of hell. She might still be sending money to Jimmy Swaggart for all the hell I know. I had freedom there in the wrecking yard. You know, I could just do whatever. I told y'all I had this little a Honda Z50 monkey that Papa had wheeled a deal, traded, and got me. And it was built from about three different Honda Z50 monkeys. And my dad had done most of the work, get it, you know, running. But then when we moved to Houston, my dad didn't want me riding around Houston because he's worried I was going to end up under a car. And My dad had also had one when he was a kid. He'd had a bad wreck on it, broke his ankle. And he, you know how dads are. You just don't want to see your kid go through the same shit as you did. My dad got mad at Papa and Granny about something. He hauled that mini bike back. That it wasn't a mini bike. It was a Honda Z50 Monkey. It had like a motorcycle style engine on it. A little 50cc engine. It wasn't like a mini bike with a Briggs and Stratton on it. I had one of them too. I built out of the wrecking yard. Had a Tecumseh motor on it. A little 3-horse Tecumseh motor on it. That Honda Z50 Monkey, you know, like I said, parts from about 3 or 4 different little old motorbikes off in the junkyard, off in the wrecking yard. And Dad got mad. He hauled it back up there. Well, when I was up there during the summer, I got bored probably about my 13th year. Green said, let's see if we can get your mini bike running. Me and her got out there and we worked on that mini bike till we got it running. We poured enough gas in the car, but that thing would fire up as a kickstart. Had 3 gears, didn't have a clutch. Boy, I really had some freedom. I was some kind of somebody on that thing, buddy. Blah, 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 up and down that dirt road. All through the wrecking yard. If you run up Sexton Road, there was a cattle guard on Sexton Road, and then you just went up a big hill, and right across the wreck yard was just pasture. It's all Curly Taylor's pasture. Cattle rancher. It's just cattle pasture. All Curly Taylor's pasture. And it's a free range cattle. You know, there's some barbed wire fences and whatnot, but all the little dirt roads was open all through the pasture. And I take that while I run across that cattle guard, and I up that hill and hit them dirt roads up and down them dirt roads, boy. Had me a rig up to hold my fishing pole on it. There was a little cattle pond at the top of that hill on Sexton Road. I go fishing that cattle pond. I ran into a cow one day on that Z50. I was just a bebopping down one of them little pasture roads that had a sharp curve in it. And come around that curve, this big old heifer standing right in the road. And I just hit her and slid up under her, and the motorbike slid down, a little Z50 slid down. Boy, I had gravel burn all over me, rocks in my skin. The old cow just walked out of the road like nothing happened. I had to walk that little motorbike home a lot, boy, all the way from up there on Sexton Road. Something would happen, running out of gas or something. Granny had taught me how to siphon gas out of the newer cars in the wrecking yard. So all them gas tanks, you had a little gas. I'm probably one of the best gas. Smelled a little funky, but back then, I don't know if I know y'all noticed this, but gas used to last longer back then. Back then, boy, you just leave a tank of gas in 6 months and still fire something up with it. You know, nowadays, boy, I leave a can of lawnmower gas about 2 weeks. That crap's gelled up and smells like garbage. Well, I rode the piss out of it. One time I was up there with my little buddy Nathan fishing that cattle pond. Boy, I caught the biggest mud catfish you ever seen in your life. I reckon that thing was probably around that long, man. You know, whisker to tail. Big old boy, I fought like a booger on my little Zebco getting that big old mud cat in. It's probably more about like his. Maybe more like his. Well, I was around that age, I sure thought it was some kind of big old fish. Couldn't wait to take that fish home and show it to Granny. And we fished whatever she gave. Granny would give us, you know, chicken gizzards, old bologna, old can of corn, old high-top can of corn, whatever, man. Just whatever she had laid around. That's what we used to be. We'd dig up worms. Sometimes I caught that mud cat on some old bacon. She decided not to cook. Remember, my buddy Nathan had to take my fishing pole on his bicycle, and I was on the motorbike, and I had to ride that motorbike all the way to Sexton Hill. It was steep, boy. You come in that hill towards that wrecking yard, holding that big old mud cat flopping around. back to Granny's house. Granny said, boy, that's the biggest fish I think I ever seen. I thought, I think so too. We got to show it to Papa. She said, yeah, he ain't home from work yet. She said, let's put it in a bucket. We put it in a bucket right over there by our porch. I remember I heard that El Camino come down that dirt road. Papa's home. Papa's home from work. Well, I run out there on that porch. I met him at the door of the El Camino. Papa, you got to say, I done caught the biggest fish you ever seen. Granny said, it's the biggest fish you ever seen. She took a Polaroid of it. Went over the bucket, and my fish was gone. Back then, I had this old black cat, and I can't remember what we called, maybe Toby or something like that. Old black cat. Wrecking yard cat sort of followed me around. Damn, if that old black cat, we heard a sound out there in the wrecking yard, and me and Papa walk out there on the hood of an old Oldsmobile. That old black cat of mine had that catfish and was just tearing it to pieces. Boy, I was so mad. I wanted to go get my BB gun and shoot the piss out of that cat. I was so mad. I remember my Papa told me, he said, you can't get mad at that cat. That cat's just doing what a cat does. Being mad at that cat for doing what a cat's supposed to do don't make no sense. He left his favorite food in a bucket. Now, that's a big old fish, boy. You caught you a big old fish. But don't be, plus, you don't, boy, look here. We ain't going to eat no mud cat. You know, that's just, you come out of that pond up there, it's just going to taste like cow shit and cow pecker. Can't be mad at a cat for doing what a cat does. Well, she always did what he didn't want to do. One time, me and Ricky, we wanted to go fish out deeper in the lake, at Lake Tyler, me and my cousin Ricky. Ricky's the one I game with all the time now. He's my gaming buddy. We're still very close. We've always been close since we were young. Ricky's the first person I ever met that was allergic to milk. My first exposure to soy milk was when we were kids. Ricky had to have soy milk. And I always think that my Aunt Carlene must have had to drive all over East Texas to try to find soy milk back in the 80s. I'd be surprised if you could find it there now. Me and Ricky, we had an idea, and Granny said, why don't y'all, we go. See, back then, them pontoon boats in the lake at Lake Tyler, they had these big old styrofoam pontoons. They didn't have those metal ones. They're giant styrofoam oil can size, like a 50-gallon drum of oil size styrofoam pontoons. They stopped using them because the nutria would eat them, tear them up, and probably not environmentally sound to be dropping little styrofoam pellets all in the lake all day. So back then, but we had found a couple of them old styrofoam pontoons, and we found enough wood around the lake and old docks that were broken and coming apart. There was a lot of abandoned stuff out there, and it was kind of the poor side of Lake Tyler back then. All the fancy houses were on the other side, and this is kind of like the poor side. And we found a bunch of these boards, and we built this platform, and we lashed them pontoons together underneath it. And then Granny had some old outdoor carpet, and we covered it in that outdoor carpet. And then we found this big pink board, and we painted diamond in the rough on it. And we got in the newspaper. We got in the Overton newspaper. People liked our little pontoon raft. And we had these big tall poles. And me and Ricky were pontoon ourselves out there and fish off the diamond in the rough. I was scared of the dark, man, like nobody you ever seen in your life back then. Probably because I was reading all that Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury and hanging out with a bunch of witches. So I get scared of the dark. I had night terrors and stuff, and nobody knew what to do about it. But when I would stay with Granny, Granny would just give, there was a big popular cold medicine that had just come out called NyQuil, and it was this green, nasty stuff. And we all know what NyQuil is now, but that original NyQuil, woo, had some alcohol in it, I think. And Granny would give me just a shot of NyQuil every night before I went to bed. And she knew ghosts was real. She believed me. She was the only one that believed me that ghosts was real. But she'd say, I got to give you this NyQuil because ghosts can't get you if you don't open your eyes. She's problematic, man. She's drugging a kid. You don't wake up, you won't see him. They work. She liked my blue eyes, too. I'm the only one in the family that's got them blue eyes. Uncle Terry's on my dad's side got blue eyes, but they's a little different than mine. Mine are kind of gray blue, and I didn't know who Raymond was back then, but she used to tell me all the time. She'd say, "Boy, you look just like my friend Raymond. You got the same blue eyes." She told me that all the time. "You just like Raymond. You got the same blue eyes as my friend Raymond. Look just like him." She eventually got other cars. She got my mom's old Taurus for a while. She had a Lumina. She had a Mustang that belonged to my parents. And at one point, she gave me the Cessna because I needed a car. You already know that story. Boy, she was hot about that. That was still a good car. I said, "Granny, not with that block. The rod, it wasn't worth putting an engine in. That was a good car. You just ruined that good car." Boy, she's hot at me about that. Let's wrap it up there. Let's do some comments, man. Some testimonials, if you will. I can't say "if you will" without thinking about Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes is one of my favorite personalities ever. We're going to do some comments, Daddy. Ain't no particular kind of athlete. There we go. At Rico Suave 8. Oh, Rico, that's my boy right there. Oh, my old JCW buddy. "Love the intro music." Man, that's an AI song I made. I kept trying to use other different kinds of music stuff and license it through YouTube, and YouTube kept scratching my monetization, screwing with me about it. So I went on a little AI app called Mozart, and I spent about 3 days creating that song. And I think it's called "Digging for Memories" or something like that. But if y'all want, man, you let me know in the comments. I'll find a way to send it to you if you want to hear the whole song. I kind of tweaked it and played with it and just kind of had fun with it, use it for an intro song. But yeah, it was just AI weird stuff. At Timothy Kofke 5575. "My dad passed in 2013. He had a construction company. We used to ride together on the faraway jobs. 11 years later, there's still a shiny spot on the passenger headrest from his bald head. I've cleaned the truck many times, but the oval spot is still there, and it still makes me tear up some days." That's because ghosts and cars go together, brother. That ain't just his bald head on that thing. That's his every bit of being. All that time y'all spent together shared in that vehicle. That's what that is, bub. Those are the only cars I've ever regret getting rid of, really. Is ones that got ghosts that was important attached to them. At PBR Street Gang 69. That's a name. I don't know if I want to see the PBR Street Gang. "When your boat has a hole in it, you have to shoot a second hole in it. Let that water out. Works for me." I shot a hole in a boat one time. I ain't proud of it. I don't remember how old I was. I was definitely in my 20s. And for whatever reason, I decided I needed a boat. I bought this little junky-ass John boat off of. I think I was doing some work somewhere, and somebody had the boat. And it was a little old junky John boat. And it had a 15-horse Merc on it, but you had to wrap the rope around it and boom, start it. It was old, from 50s or 60s or something. Old John boat, rusty as hell. That 15-horse Merc was enough to push it around. I worked with this dude at the time. It had a real bad stutter, man. Dude we called Clutch. Old Clutch had a stutter, man. Me and old Clutch took it up to Lake Conroe. We was going to this spot in Lake Conroe we found. We go up there and try to fish and have a good time. But there's a lot of snakes off in this cove where we like to go fishing. A lot of trees and Conroe chock full of water moccasins. Lake Conroe full of water moccasins, boy. And them big old black water snakes. And ones that they're mean, they're aggressive as shit. They'll chase the piss out of you. Bite the damn hell out of you. not venomous, but they're mean some 50s. I had this 22 Ruger revolver that Joey's dad gave me. Six-shot revolver. We was over there fishing that cove one day. It was starting to get dark. That's when you had to worry. You start a little later in the evening. That's when about twilight's when them snakes come out. I heard old Clutch start behind me. I heard him fidget around back there. I said, "What is it, Clutch? Spit it out, man." Clutch said, "There's a snake in the boat." I whirled around and I'm gonna tell you, it's a water moccasin. Might have just been a black water snake. They're falling out of a tree. Was right there in that boat with us. I wrench off my tackle box, grab that 22 Ruger, and I shot six holes in the bottom of that boat. And it worked. It worked, all right. Now, I didn't hit the snake, but I scared the piss out of the snake because that snake waddled his ass, flopped up the side of that boat and out in the water and got as far away from us as he could. But then I got panicky because the boat water's just coming up like a sprinkler to the bottom of the boat. I start trying to start that motor. I can't get that motor started. We start trying to paddle that boat. We're terrified now. We're in the cove where all the damn snakes are. You know, we start paddling that boat to the edge of that cove. At some point, I said, "You're on your own, Clutch." Well, I just hopped out of that boat with my tackle box, start running to that water. I thought if I run fast enough, them water moccasins could get me. There's a Clutch behind me. Whoa! Oh, shit. I forgot all about that. Can you remind me of it? Yeah, I left that up. Somebody found a Majan boat with 622 holes in it and a 15-horse Mercury engine up there at Lake Conroe. And they're welcome to it and all the snakes that like it, too. Oh, man. All right, let's wrap her up. Yo, Uncle Bobby's the first one to tell me about Raymond. So here's the deal, man. I'm just going to tell y'all the in and out of it. Granny was pregnant by a man named Raymond Harris when she met my grandfather. And my grandfather went ahead and married her anyway. My papa. Raymond Harris is my mama's daddy. Now, we didn't know all this back in, you know. But when I was 16, 17 years old, Bobby took me out to a piece of land one day, introduced me to Raymond Harris. And I was hot with him already because the way out there, he told me what he thought. What he thought that Raymond Harris was my papa. My grandfather. Mom's father. I can't tell you much about Raymond Harris. I don't remember much about him. He's a big man with blue eyes. But we left, we got in that truck. I cussed Uncle Bobby like a dog. I cussed him all the way back to Kilbo. I was so mad at him. We fight like brothers. I cussed him like a dog. I regret that. I don't regret a lot, but I regret that. I cussed him like a dog. He finally got tired of listening to it. He said, "I told y'all about J.D. Harris had the salvage yard. You know, when I was trying to make money in the wreck yard, I'd melt wire down, take wire to him back at El Camino. J.D. Harris always treated me real nice." And Uncle Bobby said, "J.D. Harris don't like nobody, but he likes you. You can't figure that out?" Makes me wish I'd spent more time around J.D. Years later, in my 20s, my mom finally did enough research that she was pretty sure Raymond Harris was her dad. My Aunt Robbie on my dad's side, my Uncle Terry's wife, Aunt Robbie, she's a very close aunt growing up. She had a sister named Susan, and Susan worked over at Kilgore Nursing Home. That's where Raymond was at the time. She was one of his caretakers. Raymond had dementia. My mom wanted to go see him. Me and my mama packed up in her car. We went to see him together. He was pretty dementia ridden at that point. He couldn't talk. He'd make sounds. He's making sounds, but his face looked just the far stages, end stages, Mitch has lost motor control and everything, and his muscles start seizing up, and his arms are all seized up. Didn't look nothing like the fella I met. Boy, my mama had some shit to say to him about what a low down, dirty son of 50 don't take care of his kids and don't. And she had every right to say it, you know. She was on the receiving end. But boy, she sure told him a mouthful that day. That'll stay between me and her. Everything she had to say that day. I found out years later, just for shits and giggles, I did a DNA test. And all of a sudden it popped up. I was first cousins with just about every Harris person in East Texas. I mean, but Randy and Jenna, all them people I grew up with, I always think Randy knew, because Randy used to tell me all the time. He was crazy, but Randy Harris used to tell me all the time. He need to come down to Montgomery County and meet all the rest of the Harrises. It's a great time. We have a great time when we get together. He always wanted me to go. I've reached out to a bunch of them over the years, and don't any of them reach back, so I reckon maybe that's a dirty secret they don't want to open up in their family. Like I said, man, was a married man, had his own wife and kids. I got some little cousins out there and a couple half-uncles and such like that and half-aunts. My mom had, I guess, three or four half-sisters probably. I don't want to talk any more about Granny. This is probably the last time I'm going to talk about her. It's very hard to love somebody who I don't know all the answers to everything in life. We've talked about toxic people and all that kind of stuff, but I can't explain how hard it is to love somebody so much that did everything they could to wreck yours and your mom's life. I still love her. I love her and hate her at the same time. I don't know if you, I think to hate somebody, you got to love them to begin with. It takes that kind of knowledge somebody to hate them. As always, man, I appreciate y'all sharing your Sunday with me. Taking these little trips. If y'all are in Houston, you want to see a good stand-up comedy show, come out and see me at the Punchline tonight before Thanksgiving. What else are you going to sit around and argue with your family all night about an election that don't even matter now? Just come on out the Punchline, man. Let me make y'all laugh. You have a good time. We're going to throw a shindig there. I'm going to let you guys, I'm going to have to do both these episodes, but I'm going to let you guys vote on where we go next week. You can go down in the comment section, not here in the chat, but in the comment section. Cast your vote. Whether we can either next week, we can finally talk about Old Blue, my first truck, my 72 F100, 363 on the tree, Explorer package, long wheelbase, fog lights. My young teenage years. Or we could take a rip-roaring ride with a really unhinged version of me and a stripper through Dallas in early 2000 running repos in a 99 Ford V10 F-350 record. Both stories are getting told, but I'll let you guys vote. I'm undecided. Thanksgiving is coming. I hope you do get to have good Thanksgivings with your families. Those of you who still got family left. Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday. My favorite Thanksgivings are from Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara's house. Paper plate Thanksgivings. Fold up tables, paper plates full of good food. Hope y'all get to have a good holiday. As always, I'm rooting for you. I tell you that every week. I mean it. I'm rooting for you. Hope the obstacles in your life are getting less, or you're getting better at knocking them the hell down. Either way works. Or if y'all don't mind, before I get out of here, I want to tell you a little something about this. So a real good friend of mine wrote a book. A friend of mine named Mike Kohler. Mike Kohler, I may have told a story or two about him, but when I started comedy, he was one of my first friends in comedy. We called him Nurse Mike. He was an emergency room nurse. He always showed up at the comedy club in his scrubs, fresh off the shift. But he's a good old boy from Waller. You know, he talked like my kind of people. He liked the same kind of stuff I did. We both like Elvis. And we go hang out at his hunting camp out in Luland, his family's hunting camp. And Mike's a pretty good old dude, you know. Everybody got the flaws, but me and Mike always got along real well. Mike went out, wrote himself a book called Stubborn Truths. And it's one of the more interesting collection of stories I've ever read. It's a lot of real world stories accompanied with historic quotes and what helped him get through some of these stories. And I really enjoyed it. I wanted to read just a passage. There was a passage here where he was talking about his grandfather. He's talking about his grandfather, how his grandfather was always sharpening his little pocket knife. There's a passage here I really enjoyed. It says, in fact, after failing many times to learn how to properly sharpen his knife, even under the closest supervision of his grandfather, Michael came to the childish conclusion that young men simply couldn't sharpen knives. He decided there must be some kind of magic in the hands of old men to help them know just how to move that blade against the stone. Possibly it was a gift or a talent or a skill that boys and young men did not possess or simply could not tap into. Michael further concluded that he did not need to learn how to sharpen his knife now because that skill would just come naturally when he got older. Even better, when he was older, he would have more time to do it then anyway. When he explained this to his grandfather, Mr. Brown, he just shook his head. Michael remembers concluding, as children are prone to do, that Mr. Brown's silence on the issue indicated that he was in complete agreement. It's one of my favorite stories in the book. It's quite a lengthy story goes with it. So if you're looking for something to gnaw on, he ain't paying me for this. He's just a friend. And I couldn't wait to get my hands on his book. And I devoured it the first night I had it. But check, it's on Amazon. It's called Stubborn Truths by Mike Kohler. Enough room at the table for all of us. I say that all the time. I'm JW and I love you. When are you gonna come down? When are you going to land? Should have stayed on the phone, should have listened to my old man. You know you can't hold me forever, I didn't sign up with you. Not a present for your friends to open, this boy's too young to be singing the blues. Mm-hmm.